Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hiya, it's me, Matt. Welcome again to Parts Unknown. We're nearing the end of our WrestleMania odyssey now, and this week we've got perhaps the show of all shows at the show of shows to chat through. Yep, those of you who've been paying attention will have realised that following last week's episode, it's now time for us to discuss WrestleMania 3. This is the show that even if you've never seen it, you'll know plenty about. More than 93,000 packed the Pontiac Silverdome in Michigan to see if Hulk Hogan could body slam the eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant. Spoiler alert, he did. The event went down a day after my fifth birthday. That's the 29th of March 1987 to everyone aside from my mum. Hi, Debs, love you. In front of, as I say, a supposed 93,000 plus crowd. As with all manias, though, that figure is hotly disputed. There were 12 matches in total, and it wasn't just the main event which would go down in the history books. We also got the classic Savage versus Steamboat bout, as well as a hair versus hair and a loser must bow match. Thankfully, nobody's locks are on the line in the PU studio today, though, quite frankly, only the good doctor would have much to lose were that the case. Time to say hello to my panel then. First then, the beautiful Rose, who's too pure for this here biz, our very own Miss Elizabeth. From Sky Sports News, it's Anton Talui.
Hello, Matt, and hello, Debs.
She'll appreciate that if she listens or if she doesn't. Next up, if Andre the Giant was the eighth wonder of the world, then she is at the very least in the top 10. She writes about wrestling, and that's just the best thing. No relation to Stephen of the so-so 80s tag team Well Done, it's Dr. Carrie Dunn.
Hello.
Finally, a man who's been on a voyage of discovery with us these past few months. He now knows that John Cena sucks and what a pun is. He claims if he were to get a wrestling tattoo, it'd be of the Junkyard Dog. We'll be putting that boast to the test later in the show. I've got my needle at the ready. He's the mouth of the South, London. Carl Anker.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. Before we break down the matches, let's start at the start. This show screamed Americana to me. We open with Vince in-ring welcoming us to WrestleMania 3. He then introduces Miss Aretha Franklin, who, Carrie, gives what I thought was the most wonderful rendition of America the Beautiful we've heard so far.
She does, but, yeah, not really saying much. I thought this was a really odd rendition. It goes on for about half an hour because she mashes it up with the Star Spangled Banner anyway. I have learned over the course of this series, looking back at all the WrestleManias, America the Beautiful is possibly the worst song ever written, and nobody can sing it really well, not even Aretha Franklin, who is a genius.
Honky Tonk Love. That's what I'm going to say to that.
Honka, 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 Burning Love, to give it its full name. The whole event, I thought, Axel, just seemed so vast compared to what we'd seen at Trump Plaza in the previous two manias that we've talked about. It felt like a big deal, didn't it?
It's what they tried to achieve at one, and they got really close with, you know, it's Madison Square Garden, they threw everything at it, and they kind of refined isn't the right word. They worked on things and then just made it bigger and grander, and I loved the spectacle behind it, and that's, you know, regardless of what goes on the ring, that's why this is one of the most memorable of all time.
Onto the graps then. The main event saw Hulk Hogan beat Andre the Giant. Carl, you're my go-to guy for explaining how feuds came about. Tell us the backstory to this one, if you will.
Oh, this one's a delight. So it's a segment on Piper's Pit where they go to award Andre the Giant with a trophy for being unbeaten in all of his, I want to say, 15-year career. The thing about this time period is a lot of numbers are quite whiffy. So they go to give Andre the Giant a trophy for his unbeaten record. Then at the same show, they go to give Hulk Hogan a trophy for being the heavyweight champion for 3 years. And Hogan's trophy is bigger. Andre is quite annoyed at this. Hogan is mid-rant about how, you know, he's fantastic and Andre's fantastic. Andre disappears in the background and then re-emerges with Bobby the Brain Heenan, which, as we've spoken a lot on this podcast, simply aligning yourself with Bobby the Brain Heenan is the surest way to tell everyone that I'm a bad guy now. So he comes out with Heenan. Hogan is incredibly confused, going, what's going on? Andre grabs his chin and goes, listen, I'm only here for one reason only, to challenge you for the World Championship Heavyweight title. That's my bad Andre impression.
It wasn't as bad as Axel's Randy Savage, so it's fine.
Thank you very much. Hogan is perplexed by what's going on. Andre goes, if you don't understand that, maybe you'll understand this. Grabs Hogan's shirt, rips it. What's really interesting is if you watch the segment, you can see Hogan's got something. He rubs the back of his hand because he's clearly got Vaseline or Vicks on it, and he shoves it in his eye. And then he rubs the Vaseline or Vicks, and he tries shoving it in his eye because he's clearly trying to do something to make himself cry. He goes to rub it, then realizes he's crying already. Well, as Hogan tells the story when he retells it, he goes, I was crying already. I didn't need the Vicks because there's just so much emotion, brother. And that is how the feud was built, because Andre was annoyed that Hogan got a bigger trophy. And then the storyline from then on was, can Hulk Hogan body slam on the Giant? Because no one had ever done it. People had done it before. Also, Andre the Giant had been beaten in his career before this. But that's the story.
And actually, in the build-up, for somebody who doesn't have English as his first language, I thought Andre actually acted it quite well, and Hogan showed the kind of chops that got him the lead role in Mr. Nanny. Carrie, in terms of the match, it's a basic wrestling match, but classic storytelling. Hogan goes for the slam almost immediately, and then we get the story that he's hurt because of that. Andre falls on top of him. It was never going to be a six-star Tokyo Dome classic, but the story pretty much perfect for what these two could do and what the background to the feud was, I thought.
I actually really like this match, and I wasn't expecting to. It doesn't go on too long. It's not kind of too repetitive. As you say, Matt, the limitations of both of them are kind of acknowledged and dealt with well in the way they put this together. And yeah, it tells the story it needs to tell perfectly, and it's sports entertaining.
Is this the most famous wrestling match ever?
I think so. It's what I think about when you think about WrestleMania, and the old WrestleManias especially. Like, no one's ever been bigger than Hulk. No one's sort of elevated wrestling more than Hulk Hogan. So it has to be a Hulk Hogan match, and who was his greatest nemesis? Well, it was Andre, and there was the story behind it was simple about, you know, felling the unbeaten giant who comes to claim what should be his by size. And it's just a simple, lovely, decently told story. I really enjoy it. I think the match is better because everybody has, like, Andre has some offense, but, you know, but there isn't that kind of, it doesn't feel like Hulk's up out of nowhere, and it's slightly more subtle than it usually is, and it's wonderful.
Only drawback was effing Bob Uecker doing the ring announcing. That guy, he's everywhere around this time. Carl, you mentioned Bobby Heenan there. I think one of the most iconic images in WrestleMania history, as well as the slam, is him with his head in his hands on that little ring cart thing going back toward the end. He really added something to this match, because as good as Andre did in the build-up, he wouldn't have been able to carry it in terms of promos and stuff on his own as effectively.
It's a fantastic spectacle. So before the match, there are two interviews with Mean Gene. And the first one, Andre just stands there, stone-faced, as Bobby talks about why Andre is amazing. He goes, he's 7'5", he's 520 pounds. He's not. Hulk Hogan's build has been 6'8", 6'9". This is truly, like, there is so much myth-making going on at the same time as the story, which, it's funnier now when you're now going, he's clearly not 7'5", but also, such is the magic about Andre the Giant, is you still think he's like 7'2". He's probably not, but if I went Andre the Giant 7'2", you're like, yeah, sure. Bobby's fantastic. The storytelling and the spectacle involved is great. And it is a mythical match, because Hulk Hogan retells this story four or five different times, and apparently he didn't know how the match was going to finish because Andre didn't tell him what the finish was. Apparently Hogan either sketched out the entire match himself, and then Andre called an audible and basically explained what was going on. Andre the Giant is not the sort of man to call audibles in a wrestling match. I love him, but he's not. I think Mad Magazine once did an article which said WrestleMania 3, where the 6'9" Hulk Hogan lifted the 7'5" on the Giant over his head in front of 93,000 people to set the world record for the most lies in one sentence. But you don't care, because it is WWE wrestling incarnate, and it is for a long, long time. That was the benchmark for main events. That was, could you top that in terms of moments? And they didn't for a long time, because that match was lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this match, I'd never seen it all the way through before. It is worth watching. It's better than you would think it would have any right to be. That's not something that we say for the secondary title bout, another which has gone down in the annals of wrestling history. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat took the Intercontinental title off Macho Man Randy Savage in a 15-minute classic. Now, wrestling matches, by and large, just weren't anywhere near this good in 1986. There is, of course, Anton, the fabled story of this being scripted out point to point by Savage before. If anybody doesn't know that, to tell us about it.
Well, that's what he did, isn't it? That's what Savage did all the time. What's the specific? I don't know the specifics behind.
Was it like 74 points or something? I think, and he'd randomly call Steamboat and be like, "Hey, point 43, brother," just to make sure that he was taking it in.
This is great. This is just wonderful. It's just, there's so many different types of moves. There's so many different, and the crowd are into it because of the character, because of Savage. And then you can see they slowly appreciate actually what they're seeing in the ring. It's wonderful.
Is it great and wonderful by 1986 standards, or nowadays does it look like a standard 2018 Raw TV match?
Yeah, it's exactly what it does. I was thinking kind of, it would be Rollins Ziggler. Effectively, something like that.
That's
now.
Exactly who came to my mind as well, actually.
Well, because we've seen it every week on Raw for the last 6 months. But the crowd make it more special. Carrie does not like that comparison, by the way.
No, completely disagree. The reason Savage Steamboat is great is not because it's a work rate match and not because technically they're excellent, even though they are. It's that meshing of what they're doing in the ring, but also the story that they're telling and the build-up to it. The build-up to it is important, and the fact that it's on a big occasion and they're raising their game, that's not the same as a 20-minute Raw match. You might be able to do the same moves in a 20-minute Raw match and get Rollins and Ziggler to do it, but who gives a shit about that? Nobody does. Literally nobody cares about that, not even Rollins and Ziggler. But Savage Steamboat is a classic, and it should be in a time capsule so that people can look back on it in 300 years and understand how good wrestling can be.
Just one question, because obviously you know way more about what goes into it, the matches, than I do. Is it down to the fact that, look, these guys in 2018, 2019 are on tour all the time? So they've got no time to develop matches. They've got, you know, they'll have a sanitized version of a match on the house shows and then go to Raw, and most days find out in the morning what they're supposed to do. And then, whereas opposed to this was a huge match, had time to build up. Obviously, Savage had time to build his 74-point plan, and then
absolutely. I mean, if you think about the number of shows that wrestlers now do, and you've got a limited number of opponents, but you've got a house show pretty much every night. You know, it's not exciting to see Rollins and Ziggler because you can see that pretty much every week, and whereas something, you know, back in 1986, 1985, even up to like probably 7-8 years ago when it wasn't so constant, it was still a big deal to see this stuff. And to see a match lasting 15 minutes at this point is huge. And yeah, it's the sense of occasion that is really important here as well that makes it a classic.
Had you watched it before, Carl?
I have. It is genuinely one of my favourite wrestling matches because Steamboat. We hinted at how good Steamboat was when he came back for that bizarre Legends match against Chris Jericho. Ricky Steamboat is the great forgotten North American wrestler, largely because a lot of his great work was done in NWA with Ric Flair. All right. Ricky Steamboat's hip toss and his arm drag are in the same level as Randy Orton's dropkick or Stone Cold's Thez Prez in terms of just one move done superbly. Over and over and over again, I can watch that. It's a great mesh of style. So WrestleMania 2, Savage is wrestling someone who isn't great. Steamboat is wrestling someone that isn't great. And you can more or less see Vince going, let's put them two together next year. And it's, you've got Savage with his methodical, I'm going to slowly take you apart because I'm a kind of cerebral champion. And you've got Ricky Steamboat doing this kind of offensive Karate Kid inspired superhero thing. And he had these great moments of explosiveness, which, you know, in 1985, oh my God, that's otherworldly. In late 90s, 2018, still really, really impressive. He has a moment where he jumps off the top rope to do an arm smash onto Savage, and he leaps over the referee to get there. I'm going, yeah, like, give me more of that.
Slightly underwhelmed by the finish. Is that a minor criticism or a legitimate one? So Savage tries to ring the bell in, but George... Savage tries to bring the bell in, but George the Animal Steel, who was Steamboat's second, stops him, and then Steamboat wins on a roll-up. Is that maybe Savage saying, that's the only way I will be beaten in this match that I've planned out intricately?
I think so. I do like a roll-up win in big matches, because it can be an admission of that it just takes that little bit of half-second thought to beat someone. So the ending, that ending is a bit bad. But what I really do like is George carrying Ricky over his shoulders to take him back to the ring, because Ricky is exhausted, which is a visual you rarely get. You either get the champion who's won the belt, splayed out, then immediately jumps up and goes, yeah, I've won it. Or you get something else. But just the shot of someone being totally exhausted winning a title that someone else has to carry them is a rare shot that I want to see more of.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And now, it wouldn't be a WrestleMania without some celebrity involvement, apart from WrestleMania 9. Here we get Alice Cooper accompanying Jake the Snake Roberts to ringside for his match against everyone's least favourite Elvis impersonator, the Honky Tonk Man. He had Jimmy Hart with him, Jake, as I say, Alice Cooper. I mean, it's a forgettable bout, I think it's fair to say. Carrie, tell us about when Honky destroyed Jake's back for real in the build-up.
Oh, God. Yes, prior to this match, so Honky Tonk had attacked Jake with a guitar. That's right, isn't it? In an in-ring segment.
And but not a Jeff Jarrett balsa wood guitar.
No, an actual guitar. And he legitimately bust his neck and back up in the run-up to it. So, yeah, about 6 weeks beforehand. So that must have been slightly worrying, I would imagine, to people planning out a WrestleMania, which was the biggest, baddest, bestest, whatever the motto was. So Honky Tonk sucks at everything, doesn't he can't even do a guitar attack right.
Well, I think the most important question of this, certainly this section of the podcast, maybe the entire podcast, who was worse out of Honky Tonk Man or Beefcake? Because I for a long time thought they were the same person.
I wonder if Honky Tonk, are we getting worked by Honky Tonk? Because
no.
Honky Tonk is awful and I hate him, and anytime he's on the screen I want to boo. But he's a heel.
I think after watching this WrestleMania, I hate Honky Tonk more than Beefcake. Because I understand more about Beefcake, we'll get to you later, I suppose, about why he is who he is. And I also get one of the...
find out like some of these deep-seated family trauma.
It's as close to an origin story as you're going to get for Brutus Beefcake. And...
Yeah,
and we get one of the best lines in one of the promos that Beefcake is standing there idly saying nothing during. Which one line.
Go for it.
Oh, sorry. Oh, it's voulez-vous scrambled eggs, Grandma? Which is... It makes no sense, but it's absolutely wonderful. So, yeah, there's a little bit of me is warm to Brutus now.
All right. Colonel Jimmy Hart, lest we forget he was at this point, took a really lame Damien the Snake-related spot from Alice Cooper post-match. Apparently... Jimmy Hart hurt himself for real somehow, and what did he sneeze or something and put his back out because the snake came sort of towards him and then went away again. I wondered if like it's quite a nice visual I get having a python there, but there are very few people that we've seen who are prepared to actually let it get anywhere near them, and it ends up being a bit of a bust, doesn't it, having it there? And hey, look, that snake's quite close to you.
I don't want a snake near me. Jimmy Hart's reaction is exactly my reaction when someone's holding me and someone's trying to put a snake near me. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Jimmy Hart sucks.
Where's Alice Cooper during this? He gets in at the end. But by this point, he's already lost the match.
Also, interesting.
He's already lost the match. Come on, Cooper, step up. All you got to do is hit Jimmy Hart. Everyone wants to hit Jimmy Hart.
Interesting wrinkle. Alice Cooper once came very close to shooting the real Elvis. That's just a fun tidbit there.
Don't just leave it hanging there.
Would that have meant we had no Honky Tonk Man?
Possibly. During one of Elvis's late stage Vegas renditions, he meets Alice Cooper. He goes, "Here, come look at my gun collection." And Cooper, in his drug fueled state, is like, "Great, cool." Elvis hands him the gun and goes, "There you are. Shoot it right now." And Cooper more or less goes, "All right," and attempts to shoot at Elvis's feet. Elvis just looks like, "What are you doing?" Yeah, so Alice Cooper once went, "Yeah, I came very close to killing Elvis."
There you go. You weren't expecting to learn that today, dear listener, but you have. Right, three matches down. We're nowhere near done yet, though. We'll take a little pause for the cause and be back quicker than you can say. Double count-out finishes have blighted much of the action in these early batch of WrestleManias we've been reviewing of late. Our friends at Beer 52 are such marks for you out there in the Parts Unknown universe that they want to give you some free beer, and not just any beer, craft beer. And not just any craft beer, a case of craft beer for free. Beer 52 is the largest craft beer club on the planet. They search out exclusive small batch craft beers from the world's greatest breweries and bring them back for their members. Take, for example, their Great British Road Trip selection, featuring amazing brews like Fierce's Moose 4.5% Chocolate Milk Stout.
Ooh, yeah! Still can't do the accent, sorry.
The Easy Peeler Citrus Session IPA from London's 4Pure.
Believe that.
And Black Isle's GoldenEye 7% West Coast Style IPA.
Give me a hell yeah.
If that sounds like your type of gimmick, sign up now at beer52.com/partsunknown and you'll get 8 spectacular craft beers, some delicious bar snacks, and Beer 52's award-winning magazine Ferment. All you have to do is pay $2.95 for delivery. And if you decide that after this free taster that the club isn't for you, there's no catch, no heel turn, no stips, you can leave Beer 52 at any time. Just head to beer52.com/partsunknown and enter the offer code PARTSUNKNOWN to claim your free case today.
Oh yeah!
Welcome back to Parts Unknown. The future of Parts Unknown is unknown. If you'd like us to keep going, tell us via our Twitter at the PE Podcast or by giving us a good review on iTunes. Thanks. So back to WrestleMania 3 then, and we should just mention that Honky Tonk Man's still the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. Miz got really close, didn't he, this year, and then they took it off him for some reason because Honky Tonk Man's legend must stay in place. The next match here we're going to talk about, Harley Race with Bobby Heenan and the Fabulous Moolah defeated Junkyard Dog in a loser must bow match. So Harley was rocking the King gimmick here, and for that reason they did a loser must bow match.
So Harley Race, when he came over from NWA to WWE, they didn't want to give him a title, so they invented the King of the Ring gimmick so they could call Harley something. And yeah, this is a match which Junkyard Dog and Harley Race have great chemistry because of all the shenanigans they've been doing in NWA. And so this match is good. This is two old as balls guys who know the ins and outs of every single move they can do. Showing that on screen is very much, I know you like to do a three-hit combo there, so I'm going to avoid that. I wrote down in my notes, it's a bit Triple H Booker T at Mania 19, this, isn't it? In terms of just like the... It's not even subtext, just like how racially text it is there. But I also know this is what Junkyard Dog did. A lot of his matches were, I'm going to fight your white hero in this true, you know, Jack Johnson versus the Great White Hope boxing scenario, and I'm going to fight him. And unfortunately in WWE, and most of wrestling, is I'm going to have a dusty finish to win.
So Race wins, JYD bows, then nails Race with a chair, and according to Gorilla, leaves with a moral victory. So that's kind of the justification for it, presumably.
Yep.
So I was expecting a lot coming in, and then there's just some sort of flaky headbutts, and Harley Race was, I mean, yeah, old as balls is a great description, because he's so wrinkled, he looks like he could have been a scrotum. So, yeah, but it happened. I'm glad I saw a bit of Harley Race. I hate a belly-to-belly finish.
It's just in wrestling?
Yeah. Not everything I say is filthy. Belly to belly is just the worst suplex. It's like, I hate it when Bailey uses it to finish matches and Race uses it here. It's just That, come on.
It's a transition move.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
The Harley Race stuff, he's 10 years past his sell-by date at Mania 3. I do recommend some of his promos in NWA. There's an amazing one in NWA where he puts a $50,000 hit on Ric Flair. It's seared in my memory of just, he's just him in like a cheap polyester suit in a red studio, and there's a briefcase full of money, and he's going, I'm just going to offer $50,000 to any human being that can take out Ric Flair. Anyone. Briscoes. Kabuki. So-and-so. You're the champion. You beat him. Someone. Come take this money. That's Harley Race.
Wow. Next, Rowdy Roddy Piper defeated Adrian Adonis, brackets with Jimmy Hart, of course. Stips galore here. Hair versus hair. Supposedly Piper's retirement match. There's a large banner spread amongst the front row saying, we'll miss you, Roddy. I wonder where John Cena got his disingenuity from. Piper ran to the ring. Most of the others were on those mini golf cart wrestling things. They were cool, weren't they? I really like those.
That's amazing. I kind of want one just for my everyday activities, just to scoot around the house and cheer myself as I go down the stairs, that kind of thing. It'd be cool.
Adonis, a narcissist, despite being a chubster with a black eye here, which is very wrestling. Another kind of forgettable match, essentially, this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more interesting for the not quite a promo package, but the way they show the build-up. Because, again, you can see why people are interested in Roddy Piper. There's a bit where he's constantly being ambushed and blindsided by Adonis' crew. And there's a segment where he is trashing up someone's studio, and he has a baseball bat, a wooden one, just slams it to the ground, and he breaks it in one blow. I'm like, you're dangerous. Okay. And he's, you're dangerous. You're also, I can see why later on when you went into Hall of Fame, they gave you a segment with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I can also see why fans, when they're like, hand with racist stuff, whatever. But like, Roddy Piper was a good character because he possessed that unique aggressive energy that Stone Cold had. And that unique, I don't really care about titles and whatnot. I'm just going to beat up someone who offends me. Which, in Piper's, you know, in Stone Cold's case, was his boss. In Piper's case, tended to be people of color and people who didn't dress masculine. I'm pulling a face.
It was a different time. Other matches that took place at the Silver Dome included Billy Jack Haynes versus Hercules, which ended in a double countout. Haiti Kid, Hillbilly Jim, and Little Beaver defeated King Kong Bundy, Little Tokyo, and Lord Littlebrook by disqualification in a match which set the record for the use of the word midget on television in a 4-minute spell. The Dream Team, Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine. That's right, Brutus Beefcake in a team called the Dream Team with Dino Bravo and Johnny Valiant went over the Rougeau brothers. Butch Reed bested Coco Beware, and the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov defeated the Killer Bees by disqualification. Anyone got anything to say on any of those matches? Anton has.
A Ray Rougeau fact.
Okay.
He...
Always time for one of those.
...saved the life of a 70-plus-year-old man and a friend of his who was trapped in the Canadian wilderness by flying his own plane to find him. Took him 2 days.
Wow, good on him.
And he's now, obviously, the French commentator for WWE.
Oh, lovely. Hercules is Hercules Hernandez in WrestleMania 3. Vince McMahon has always hated surnames.
I'm not talking about the Beefcake becoming the barber.
Okay, you can do that if you want.
It makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
For
Beefcake completists, yeah.
Yeah, for WrestleManias, I've seen just this terrible wrestler with bulging eyes and, let's say, protruding muscles run around with shears. Who's apparently be the good guy, and now I know it all happened at WrestleMania 3 because he came in at the end of the hair versus hair match to cut hair. So there you go. It makes a tiny bit more sense now.
It does. It's fine. I just think it's been a much bigger revelation for you than for any of us or anyone listening.
He still sucks.
Oh, he's still awful.
There is that weird moment when he comes in the Jake the Snake Roberts match where Jake is borderline passed out from a sleep hold and shakes him awake. I thought he was choking him, but apparently he's trying to help him. Like, wait, Jake the Snake and Beefcake are friends? No, go, you leave him alone. He's a good wrestler.
The in-ring action on the night kicked off with a tag team bout, which saw the Can-Am Connection, Rick Martel and Tom Zenk, beat Bob Orton and the Magnificent Morocco. So this is the first match, Gary. No entrances for either, but still just felt really big time. Jesse talking about it being the biggest event in wrestling history. So yeah, a big deal for these lot to all be in it. Did you notice any similarity in style? I'm not saying I did, between Cowboy Bob's wrestling style and Young Randall.
No, I wasn't looking for that, to be honest.
There were no RKOs.
Out of nowhere. This was an odd match, I thought, to kick off with. You say that there's all this kind of pomp and circumstance with the kind of with the introductions. They don't get entrances, and then this lasts, what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
Yeah.
This was... I mean, were people hyped about this at the time? Was this supposed to be a big deal, or was this an actual warm-up match? I don't know.
Well, this is interesting in terms of the opening matches that we've had. We've had a couple in recent weeks that we've said, well, they've been far too long. So maybe the thinking here was, let's just get these guys in and out. Morocco took the pin from Zenk, and there you go. Is it more just like a scene set? Okay, everyone get in your seats. It's starting now with this insignificant match.
It's a scene set, definitely. I know Japanese wrestling for a long time had... Because they had loads of their main events last 45, 60 minutes long, a lot of Japanese wrestling fans would not sit down and to at least 20 minutes. So they once famously had a main event that ended in 15 minutes, basically going, you sit down when I tell you to sit down to change crowd reaction. But I like this. I prefer the tag team matches in this era because tag wrestling is better due to the fact that because you have an extra person, you can have someone hold someone so you can set up the spot you want to do. So, you know, no one can dropkick here, but in this era, if you have someone hold someone and then the other person do the dropkick, then you still get the dropkick. Yeah, old wrestling is hard.
two things I like about this match. One is that it's just the crowd sort of are into it from the start, even though it's a bit of a throwaway match just to get everyone in the mood. But secondly, I like the fact that every time a smaller competitor tries to lift and slam a bigger one, it was such a big deal back then. So I think Zenk slams Morocco at some point, and the crowd just loses it. It goes absolutely crazy. And you're like, okay, you just help me put into context how big a deal the big move in the main event really was, because lifting up big guys was a huge deal back then.
It is now, in some circles. Yeah.
Cesaro does the thing. Something that's also particularly interesting in WrestleMania 3s and whatnot. Less camera flashes. You can really... It's really noticeable how... when watching it, you just see less because not everyone has a camera, not everyone has cameras of sufficient quality to take photos of action. So you normally get the two wrestlers stand across each other, whole bunch of camera flashes, stops, no camera flashes. You know, maybe that's why people got more excited pre-internet, because they weren't looking through a camera or on their phones or doing something. It wasn't...
Another little production thing, this being the first one, the announcers were miles away from the ring they showed as well. Like, they must have had a good monitor.
They are. They're miles away, and we'll talk about this in the next episode too. They're miles away, and they're kind of in armchairs as well. Vince kind of in his tux, about 3 miles away, up in the gods of the arena. And yeah, must have been very good monitors, or maybe he knew what was going to happen. I don't know.
It's very BBC at Glastonbury.
Nice. The last match we're going to talk about at length saw Dangerous Danny Davis in the Hart Foundation, that being Brett and Jim, with Jimmy Hart, of course, beat the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid. They had Tito Santana as the third man in their team. Prior to the match, Ventura does an in-ring spot. He doesn't say anything, but insisted on being announced, apparently so they could plug that he was in Predator, which was coming out at this time. A six-man match to take the strain off Dynamite, who'd knackered his back by this point, as we've spoken about. Mary Hart, then the host of Entertainment Tonight on commentary. She wasn't very good at it. Well, she wasn't entertaining, ironically.
No, and also she was very... she was trying to make a joke about her name, and she did manage to... She didn't really manage to actually carry that off at all, because she was trying to specify that she wasn't one of... Oh, yeah, she was terrible. She was terrible.
Did you like, Carl, the Botchamania here on the pre-match promo where Jimmy Hart's trying to give it all the serious. Here we go. And Danny Davis has just stood in his way in the shot, so you can just see an arm coming out every so often.
That's pretty much that. A show which we were all keenly anticipating, I'm sure. Had you seen it before, Carrie, and did it live up to the hype for you?
Yeah, not in its entirety. I hadn't seen it before. I think basically I knew WrestleMania 3 for Savage Steamboat because... yeah, that's my kind of thing. And then I was pleasantly surprised, as I say, by Hogan against Andre. And, yeah, I enjoyed this WrestleMania. It was good.
It was a nice palate cleanser, Carl, I thought, after the stinkathons at Trump Plaza.
It is the... I know we do this in reverse chronological order, so next they're in chronological. This is the best WrestleMania. This is the first good WrestleMania. It's got two of the biggest wrestling storylines of all time to date. And if you want to tell like the most influential, you know, North American wrestling stories, yeah, top five is Andre versus Hogan, and top 20 is at least Steamboat versus Savage. So it's well deserved and well worth the... No, it's not, because WWE overblows everything. Yeah, it is a good wrestling event that was probably viewed by 60,000, that is being told to you as being viewed by 93,000.
And 60,000 is an impressive number.
Yeah,
there's no need to exaggerate it.
But you've seen Vince McMahon's body.
That's yeah, that's impressive too. Anton, are we kind of have learnt that to be a good WrestleMania, really, you only need three, maybe four excellent matches on it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's absolutely fair, because it's what you remember, isn't it? It's such a long show. I mean, even when the shorter ones are still 3 hours, it's what you take away from it, and you can't possibly take away three. You'd be emotionally exhausted.
Yeah, they always say you need that up and down.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a really, really good WrestleMania. I love the main event. Obviously love Steamboat and Savage. There are enough little bits from other characters to kind of keep you entertained for the rest of it. It's over the top. It's full blown. It's kind of Vince McMahon fever dream. It works. It's just wonderful.
Did you have a WrestleMania moment?
I just cannot look past the stare down before the match between Andre and Hulk. Never mind the slam, because the slam's a little bit sag, the arched back, and obviously you know what state Andre is in before that. When they just go face to face, that's my moment.
Carl?
George the Animal Steel lifting up Ricky on his shoulders to go, yeah, you've won the trophy. Like, let's get out of here.
Gary?
Oh, Matilda. Always Matilda. I like when Matilda is there.
That being the Bulldog's Bulldog.
The Bulldog's Bulldog. The Bulldog of choice. The discerning Bulldog.
I'm going to go for just the start. Just Vince with the in-ring opening. I just thought brought to life the scale of the whole thing, and it was amazing. That was an unusually positive show for us, wasn't it? There you go. Next week, we're going to conclude our look back by reviewing the first two WrestleManias in one go. We'll follow that up with a final What We Learned episode. Until then, Carrie, what's your Twitter handle?
At Carrie Sparkle.
And Carl.
And Command 616.
And Anton.
At Sky Anton.
Lovely stuff. I am at Matt Davis Adams. We are at the PU Podcast. We'll see you next time for more Parts Unknown.
The Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.